Dear global citizens, welcome to our Eid special and third episode of Sustainable Saturdays. This Saturday, we concentrate on the Y20 and 2020 group that focuses on young people who are future fit, empowered, and are global citizens. Our featured guest today is Athman Al-Ma'ammar, chair of the Y20 2020 and the research lead at MISC Foundation. What is the Y20, you wonder? Well, this year, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia holds the presidency of the G20, along with its Youth 20, also known as Y20 Engagement Group, that provides a platform for young people to have their voices heard on issues relevant to the G20 agenda. Disclaimer: due to COVID-19, we have recorded this episode via phone. Therefore, you might notice some differences in sound quality due to the distance of the three speakers.
Athman Al-Ma'ammar is the chair of the Y20 Engagement Group in 2020 and a research lead at the MISC Foundation, where he leads multiple research initiatives that aim not only to understand the challenges faced by young people, but also how young people can take the lead in solving them. Athman also leads the development of the Global Youth Index that tracks youth development in 25 countries, and he also leads a Global Future Skills Initiative that aims to uncover future learning journeys for youth in 6 cities globally. Athman manages the content creation of different white papers on topics relevant to young people, such as the future of work, youth leadership, and youth entrepreneurship. Athman holds his bachelor's degree in finance from Penn State University and a master's degree from Duke University. Thank you so much for being with us, Athman. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Khulod, very much. Happy to be here.
Great. Athman, we're going to ask you a couple of questions. And I'll hand over the mic to my colleague, Daad, who will take the lead at the first couple of questions.
Okay, to kick off our set of questions, I'd like to first say it really truly is an honor to have you here, Athman, as the chair of the Y20 and as a person who's contributed a lot to the youth. Our first question is, what are your thoughts about the SDGs and how important are they for sustainability?
A very good question. I think the SDGs are a very good step that is not only looked at from a government perspective, it's currently being adopted by the private sector. We see a lot of CSR programs put into it, and that has been trickling down to the average citizen. What makes the Sustainable Development Goals very unique, though, is the fact that all of the UN countries have agreed to them, which means that there is a commitment in place to achieve these goals. However, one of the things that make the Sustainable Development Goals very difficult to achieve, as well as that it has to be taken on by the citizens themselves, and mostly by youth, since they're going to be the torchbearers for the future generations.
Great. So you speak about the importance of the implementation of the SDGs. On a personal level, yes, on a personal level, how are you incorporating the SDGs in your daily routine?
So that's a very good question. I think that the thought process here, for me, at least in the way that I think about sustainable development goals, is that they need to be centered around the values. If you wake up every day and you have to consciously think that I have to be sustainable and I have to do this specific element about sustainability, then it might be very difficult for you to make that sustainable in your everyday life. I think if we look at sustainability from a values perspective and try to look at the smaller things that we do every day, what aligns with our own personal value set, and having that be the compass that guides us to developing or focusing on specific SDGs. For example, from my personal view, I really like peace, justice, and strong institutions. And I also like quality education. And these are the ones that align very well with what I do every day. And it's one of my key areas when it comes to my passion. So, for example, a lot of the research that I do on youth right now is related to education. and this is even more pertinent now with COVID-19. But a lot of the focus that we see right now is that youth today are not being prepared for the future of work. And as countries who signed on to the SDGs, this is especially important for them, more so for developing countries, I would say, than developed countries. But even developed countries' youth are still required to be more educated and develop their skill sets better for a future of work that is currently very uncertain. So to answer your question in a more short way is to say, aligning the SDGs with your own value set, so that way it could be easily incorporated in your everyday life, is the way that I personally go about sustainable development, and at least in an everyday sense. And then having specific goals that require you to have them as a kind of a North Star. One of the key ways, for example, is as part of the Y20, we have the SDGs included there.
As chair of the Y20, you mentioned once that the Y20 is considered the coolest group out of the G20 groups. So if you can speak to us more about the Y20 and how important it is to the youth and what is it doing for the youth in general?
Sure. So yes, I do think the Y20 is the quote-unquote the coolest engagement group out of all the other engagement groups, but I'm sure the other engagement groups wouldn't appreciate me saying this. But in all honesty, yes, I do think that for very specific reasons. One of the biggest ones, though, is that our engagement groups focuses on a very cool population or demographic of that population, which is youth, of course. So as part of the Y20, it's a platform or a bridge that allows the voices of young people to advocate directly to the G20 leadership, which means that it's one of the very few platforms in the world where youth can, in many ways, impact decision-making on a very high level. One of the key issues when it comes to youth right now is that they're not as involved in policy making and policy development as they should be. And this is especially pertinent, for example, for the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals. If you have a generation that is not fully bought on to the SDGs, they don't know what they are, for example, in terms of awareness. They don't know how each one could contribute to their daily life or the importance of each one. For example, then it's very difficult for them to be adopted and then implemented, especially when we're looking at it from a sustainable sense and looking at it from an implementation sense in the future. So in the Y20, what we're doing is we're giving the voices of youth to come in to advocate to the G20 leadership through policy making. And we're focusing on three main topics this year. We're focusing on Future Fit, which aligns quite well with quality education. And this is looking specifically at future skills, the future of work, and entrepreneurship. So 4 and 8, I would say, in terms of the SDGs, are quite linked there. The other priority area we're focusing on is youth empowerment. And this is quite self-explanatory in the sense of ensuring that youth have a voice in decision-making and also they're prepared to lead from a very young stage and having the tools and the skill sets to lead. And then the third one is about global citizenship. And this is pretty much at the heart of the Sustainable Development Goals. And there we're focusing on multiculturalism and sustainable development. And we're specifically linking sustainable development, of course, to the SDGs, because all G20 countries have signed on to the SDGs. So it makes sense for us as youth to discuss that. The G20 has a group called the Development Working Group, interestingly, which focuses on the SDGs and other related elements related to the SDGs. And they look at the progress and the monitoring and are we achieving our goals related to that or not. And so the SDGs are not only a UN specific, let's say, goal, but now the G20 have also taken on that mantle to also achieve them together.
Post G20, what are the impact or the outcomes that the youth are going to witness after the G20? Are there any organizations that are going to come out or any initiatives that are going to be put in place. So like, can you speak to us about post G20 and what is there going to be like more tangible, let's say, experiences for the youth?
Sure. So every year the G20 happens, right? And so alongside that, in parallel, we have the Y20, the C20, the T20, the L20, the B20, the other alphabet soup of engagement groups. And they each focus on a specific target audience, right? So when we're talking about the B20, they focus on the business community. When we're talking about the C20, we're focusing on civil society. So each group has their own definition of impact. But I think one thing that we all agree on is the fact that decision making within the G20 sense have to include these demographics from the other engagement groups. Therefore, our main impact is how well are our focus areas or our policies that each delegate develops within the engagement groups are included in the G20. So essentially, if one policy from the Y20 is included, the chance of or the impact is quite high because you're impacting close to 60% of the total youth population. Hopefully. So it's a very high risk, high reward sort of engagement. But besides the policy angle, one of the key things that makes the Y20 quite interesting is that it's one of the few platforms of its kind, which means that we gather in representatives from G20 countries. And this year we're adding a couple of guest countries as well. And we're also including international organizations to select delegates. These are delegates or these are youth leaders who are selected by their countries to attend the Y20 and represent youth's voices. Having these amazing conversations amongst themselves will develop these interesting cohort of people who can then lead on after the Y20 to push on the mantle for youth involvement. That's our main hope and goal. One of the key things that we're doing as well in the Y20 is we're creating legacy components, right? So if every year the Y20 happens, then what will be the legacy that the Y20 Saudi will give to future Y20s? So in terms of tangible impact there, we're working on a couple of cool elements. One thing are white papers that we're developing with our partners, specifically on the topics or priority areas related to the Y20 this year, which is future fit, youth empowerment, and global citizenship, and they align quite well with the SDGs. The other thing that we're doing is related to delegate training, and so preparing the delegates for policymaking. And lastly, what we're including as a part of our program is something called the Organizer Summit. And what this will basically do, or the main outcome of this, is that we will get all of the organizers together to come up with the new structure for Y20 moving forward. And having a structure is quite important for an engagement group because it creates sustainability. So on that theme, I suppose. One last thing that I would like to add here, I would say, is the Y20 community, which we're working on and hopefully we'll be able to deploy. And this relates to including youth from the previous Y20 alumni to join in. So creating the community, creating the policy influence, and creating the post Y20 sustainability is quite important for us. And these are the main outcome levels that we're hoping to get.
Great. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
Amazing, Athman. We really hope to see the impact of the policies that will be recommended from the Y20 engagement group. So, Athman, as a research lead in MISC Foundation, can you talk more about your the research you have done at MISC Foundation at the Global Youth Index? What are interesting insights that you can share with us? And what is the impact of the research you're doing at MISC?
Sure. So when I joined MISC, the first day, I remember joining on the first day, and I thought that I would have, you know, a lot of time to think about what were the main research questions that I would look at. And, you know, I have this 1 month kind of a research foray into kind of like the needs of youth and so on and so forth. But basically, on the first day that I got to MISC, they were like, hey, we'd like you to do a global youth index that focuses on this many countries and looks at youth development angle from five main domains. And I'm like, wow. This was already set. So essentially, I as soon as I started in MISC, the work has been exponential in the sense that a lot of involvement on youth-specific issues have been focused on in the research. And so one of the key things that we worked on is the Global Youth Index. And what the index basically answers or tries to answer is one main question, which is how do countries around the world prepare youth for the knowledge economy? And we looked at answering this question in five main ways. We looked at, or different lenses, so to speak. We looked at education, we looked at employment, we looked at entrepreneurship, we looked at global citizenship, and then something called the knowledge economy ecosystem, which is basically a fancy word for macroeconomic indicators. And we basically combined that. And we assessed these countries, they're the G20 countries, as well as six other countries that we've included, based on different elements to youth development. And so this research essentially looked at the all of these countries, and we ranked them based on how well they were able to address the, or how well they scored on the indicators that we've tested them on. The different things about this index was that we actually did it from a survey perspective for the most part. So we've basically looked at it from talking to youth directly, not just talking about them, which is an issue that we've seen in most research, is that we'd like to make sure that a lot of the index that we, a lot of the weighing in the index is done through the survey, which is from the youth directly as opposed to secondary data. I won't go too much into details on this, but the main findings of the index, what made the index quite interesting, is that we had this amazing source of data that we were able to understand youth from. And one of the cool things, or one of the cool findings that made me scratch my head a little bit, was that youth in developing countries were actually more optimistic than youth in developed countries. So you'd think, you know, youth in developed countries would be more optimistic because they have all the resources, everything's available sort of for them. But in reality, that wasn't the case in the research. And we thought that was a very good way for developing countries to utilize that in order for them to improve, right, economically speaking. We've also noticed that entrepreneurship is quite high in developing countries. But that is also something that we had a little bit of kind of hesitance to, because there's two types of entrepreneurship, right? One is you entrepreneurship by necessity, and then entrepreneurship by want. And necessity here means that you need to become an entrepreneur in order to survive, like, you know, opening a mom and pop shop, selling flowers on the street, so on and so forth. And then you have the entrepreneurship by want, which is you actually wanting to start a business even though you could get another job. And so for us in the research, this was just one of the ways where we were able to understand the youth population from 18 to 30 years old. The other cool thing about the index is that we were able to compare countries. So we were able to look at what were the highest scoring countries and what they were doing right. For example, the number one country in the index was Sweden. And they've been talking about youth development since the 1940s, where people were at World War II. And so it's very interesting to see how these different countries address youth development. And it gives you a fresh perspective on Saudi too. Like, what are the ways that, since we are a majority youth population, what are the ways that we can improve on, and what are the ways that we can like utilize as a competitive advantage when it comes to strengths. But yeah, this is one of the key ways that we're utilizing the index. And honestly, it was an amazing project. And we plan on doing it this year as well for the second iteration, inshallah.
Amazing impact, Athman. We wish you all the best in your research. And we're excited to hear more about يعني more research initiatives يعني and the pipeline and the planning. I love when you said يعني we're not we should be talking to youth and not about youth. I love this statement. Athman, if you were to give one last maybe messages or few words to the youth, what would you say?
I say, honestly, like I'm a young person myself, so I should probably listen to my own advice. But in all honesty, I would just say be proactive. I think one of the key things that we see today is that everything's available at our fingertips. I'm sure there are issues with access. I'm sure there's a lot of barriers. Mental health issues are spiking up. There's a lot of challenges. COVID-19, entrepreneurship is taking a hit. Employment is going to be very difficult because youth are the most vulnerable groups. These are all challenges. I fully understand that. I'm not saying this advice outside of that. I'm saying it despite of those challenges. We have today everything in terms of knowledge in our fingertips when it comes to our phones. And so we need to utilize that proactivity and have the entrepreneurial mindset to go and research to understand what we'd like to do. And then utilize that knowledge to build a career from it. I think one of the coolest ways that I was able to see this is through the interviews I've done as part of the Future Skills Report, where we went to 6 cities around the world and we interviewed about 16 to 20 youth per city. One of the key themes that made us, that were very clear from these youth leaders is that they showcased a very proactive approach to their life. They don't wait for the classroom. The classroom is part of their learning. And learning for them was very much a lifelong process. It wasn't sort of, oh, I would go to this university and then I'd graduate and then I'd get the degree and then, you know, I'm done. And then if I need to go get my master's, I'll go get it. No, they see learning as not a mission per se, but as something that is as, you know, it's normal for their daily life. And I would say being proactive and treating learning as a process as opposed to a, you know, a metered step in time would be the key. And not, I would say, advice, but I would say it's the key element that youth should focus on today.
I agree with you 100%, Athman. Thank you so much for sharing those words. And we wish you all the best in your research at MISC and in chairing the Y20. Super happy and excited to have you again in our podcast. And thank you so much for taking out of your time to be with us.
Of course. This was a pleasure. I wish you all the best of luck. This was an amazing podcast. I love the idea. Please continue on with it.